Welcome, everyone, to episode number 111 of Underserved. Joining me today is Drew Schillinger, a tech executive from Atlanta. Let's get started.
Welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry, where we focus on stories of tech industry leaders, their insights, and their lessons learned. And now, your host, Andrew Jalina.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us today on Underserved.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So how did you first become interested in technology?
I was fascinated by this Atari that we had for maybe all of 2 weeks. I was an English major and I fell into this line of work. I took a job writing and I fell in love with the industry. So I'm a self-taught engineer. And as I moved into it later on, my grandfather, Jack Schillinger, was my best friend as well as a mentor. Jumping ahead in my story, when I came home with the promotion of lead engineer at Adult Swim, I called him up and said, "You're not the only engineer in the family anymore." So my grandfather was a mechanical engineer, and he taught himself Fortran in the late 60s, early 70s as a way to run numbers on a new way of pre-stressing concrete. Then he started teaching himself BASIC in the early 80s. He passed away about 8 years ago at the age of 96, but he had survived 4 heart attacks. During, I think it was the second or third heart attack, he was in the hospital in the mid-80s, and he bought this Atari and built a BASIC program to teach me programming. I never knew about this, and when I told him that, he said, "Yeah, you never knew about this because your family did not want you sitting in front of a computer all day." And we laughed over the fact that in 1985 was very, very different than today, where we're all sitting in front of a computer.
We're both sitting in front of one right now.
Exactly. So when I taught at Full Sail, he was the one who reminded me, remember, if you know logic, you're a programmer. Everything else becomes vocabulary.
You're an English and film major. You had a film school internship at Nickelodeon.
Yeah. So like I said, I was intimidated by the computer science program at UF. I came in with a very, very fixed mindset. I didn't know anything about mindset at the time. And I knew that I was really good at English. I was the editor for all of my friends. But I remember struggling with things like math. So I avoided anything that was computer related. And I went to film school. I transferred after UF, I transferred to UCF, and I double majored as English and film. And I had a opportunity to work on a one series show at Nickelodeon called You're On. I met Keenan and Kel in the elevator a couple times, and it was fantastic. I was able to write some jokes that made the air, and this was going to be my life. But then reality hit, and the show ended. I was still in school and was unwilling to quit school and move to California just to chase something that may or may not be there. I wanted to finish up and I needed a job. So while I was finishing up school, I took a job writing content for a thing called the internet, whatever that was, back in 1998. It reminded me so much of where the animation industry was in the 1930s. We were literally building the world that we lived in, building the technology that we used, and I was bit by the bug. So I had a couple fun conversations with film professors who really wanted to see me move forward in that industry, but I wanted to see where this internet thing was going to go, and I'm glad that I stuck with it. Google came up, Yahoo came up, the bubble burst, and the startup I was at, like so many others, went under, and everybody went from this startup to another startup. What we were doing was an online catalog, and we were purchased eventually by awards.com. And that's where I really needed to buckle down. People said, hey, we need a webmaster. Oh, Drew is our webmaster. I was not a webmaster. I was a web content editor. I was a writer, but I needed a job and I loved the industry. So I said yes. From there, I came to the realization that technology has an impact one way or another. And the impact I wanted to make was more on connecting people than creating pens and giveaways and things of that nature. My wife is a teacher of 20 years. She was teaching in Orange County, Orlando at the time, and I took a job to start the software engineering and web department for Lake County Schools just outside of Orlando. And that's really where I taught myself everything. That's where my grandfather really came in as a mentor. I joke that I felt like Gandalf. This was before Wikipedia. This was before Stack Overflow. So in order to learn things on Friday nights, when my wife would be grading papers, we would go to Barnes & Noble or Borders, and she would sit and grade papers for about 2 or 3 hours, and I would have a stack of books. I felt like Gandalf with all the different magic spell books open, and I would be writing different code on napkins, knowing exactly what I wanted to build out the following week. One of the brilliant things about working at Lake County was I was the only web person there, so there was nobody to call bullshit. When I would say something would take 3 weeks to build, everybody would be excited that I would say it would take 3 weeks to build. Really, it took me 3 days to build whatever the thing was. And then I would rebuild it in a different stack, in a different language, or build in features that I thought that it needed. Little did I know that at that same time in 2001, 2002, a thing called agile development was just coming up. I really learned a lot about running Windows servers as well as Linux servers, databases. A thing called Drupal was invented around then. And I said, why would I want to use something that somebody else built? And I built a CMS for Lake County Schools. I really feel that was the foundation of where I am today, was being able to really learn the basic components of why something works. Then I went toe-to-toe with a thing called imposter syndrome when I was hired to teach programming at Full Sail. And I said, wait a second, I'm self-taught on this. How are you asking me to teach? And they said, just stay 2 weeks ahead of the students.
That sounds like consulting.
Yes, indeed. And so I actually invested in a book this time. Rather than just writing code down on napkins, I bought a book about trigonometry for Flash animators. And I felt that I have 2 weeks until I need to start teaching class. I better build a site that I can show the students and be the type of teacher that I would have wanted to have if I went through this type of program. It worked a little too well. A lot of the students spent most of the time playing with this website. What I ended up doing was building a flash animation of, it looked like my desk. It was messy. There was crumpled up piece of paper that you could move around. There were pencils that you could move around, and then you could bounce balls and they would make little sounds. And so the trigonometry was the angles of all of this. Each class, I had 3 weeks to get the 30 students or so up to speed on how to go from what is this thing called Flash to building a full video website with video player and movie loader and things of that nature. That really came in handy later on. From there, was hired at Disney. And that was where another great lesson came into play. My daughter was born at this time. I was a contractor for 9 months. And there were six of us in one room all working on various projects. To this day, I am still friends with several of the people we talk almost weekly. But early on, I did not know how to tell anybody that I was struggling, because I had spent so much time being self-taught, not having any kind of template to say, I don't know this thing, having the time to learn it on my own so I could pull it out at the end of the project. And I started dropping deadlines. Things were getting really bleak there. I was really stressed out. I knew that I was having trouble estimating. And the thing that I had no idea how to communicate was, hey, I don't know what we're going to run into. Well, I was a contractor. They could have let me go at any moment. But fortunately for me, my tech manager took me aside and said, we know that you can do this. They gave me a template of checking in every day on what I was working on. In my mind, I was still struggling every day. I went home that day. That was the hardest day of my life because my daughter was 3 months old and I took her into her bedroom and read every Dr. Seuss book we had. I looked her straight in the face and I knew that I could not look my daughter in her eyes for the rest of my life, knowing that I did not do everything that I could do to give her a good life, that I had an opportunity to work at Disney and I let it go because I could not change. So I really learned how to study. And I studied everything, the schematics of how end to end, how the Disney system works. I could still probably write it on a whiteboard to this day. Every day, I figured I was still struggling. What I didn't know was that struggle was coming off as growth. And 6 months after that, I was given the opportunity to come on Disney full time. Now, somewhere in my past life, I pissed off a Time Lord or a minor deity because timing always works really interesting around me. And this was the exact same day. 2 hours after I accepted their offer enthusiastically, I had to rescind that. I had to put in my 2 weeks notice because I was hired at Adult Swim, which was my dream job. When I told my wife, I had been interviewing with them for a couple months and didn't hear anything back from them. Around this time, they had just broken off from Cartoon Network and needed to build out their engineering team. When I told my wife, listen, we're going to have to move from Orlando to Atlanta. We have a house. We have a baby. You've been a teacher for 10 years. I'm tendering my resignation 2 hours after I was given a FTE at Disney. Her response was, oh, these are those cartoons with the annoying voices that you wake me up laughing at 2 a.m. Yes, indeed it was.
You are listening to the Underserved Podcast. Underserved is produced by Maris Consulting Group, embracing the power of people in technology. For more information, visit mariscg.com. That's mariscg.com.
Yeah, I want to go to work for them.
Yeah. So that minor deity or that Time Lord that likes to have fun at my expense, my first day on the job was January 31st, 2007. And this was the day that Boston shut down because people had found a marketing stunt gone wrong where we had put up light brights of a character sticking up his middle finger. And it was supposed to be that you are coming home from a bar, you say, oh, I know that character. That's from that show on Cartoon Network. And it was getting people hyped up for a movie that was not coming out for another 3 months or so. Well, somebody, understandably, 6 years after 9/11, saw hardware hanging on a bridge with wires and batteries, and rightfully and thankfully called the authorities. So the city came to a standstill before 9 a.m, my absolute first day on the job. My wife turned on CNN and saw Cartoon Network is going to owe $1 million. And her first thought was, uh-oh, the last person in is going to be the first person out. But I thank that minor deity or that Time Lord because it was the best trial by fire I could have. I really got to show what I had that day. I had to borrow somebody's laptop. I had to pull down 30-day trials of Illustrator and Flash and Photoshop. And I pulled out my USB drive from my time at Full Sail, and I already had the scaffolding right there. I already had a website that had a movie player on it and a preloader on it. All I had to do was fill in everything. Our preloader was an MP4 video of an explosion. I mean, think about that. The preloader needed a preloader. And the explosion ends and then it goes into the site and Mastodon is playing in the background. It was fantastic. I got it up by, I think it was like 8 p.m., 9 p.m. We had the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie site up because we needed to on CNN. I was exhausted. That was my first day. We came in the next day and found out that none of our audience was able to view the site because it was early 2007 and most of them were still on dial-up. Maybe they were on DSL. And so my creative director said, F it, if they can't view the site, let's give them a low band site. He gave me carte blanche. He said, let's go ahead and make it look like the 90s threw up on that site. What was brilliant was I had just recently before I left Disney, my two buddies and I were talking about it would be so much fun to make a nostalgia site where it was the 90s, and we talked about everything that a site like that would have. So I actually downloaded, I had to go on to some torrent and find an old version of a Lair home site, since that was the IDE that I started off with in 1998. I configured it to spit out all of the HTML in uppercase, like I remembered it being in the 90s. I found an image of a broken image from Netscape Navigator, made links go to different places. We watered down the video to such a point that it was pixelated and unlistenable. The site itself, I found a copy of, and I put it up on my personal site a few weeks ago. And later on, there was a site called Dig. Found out that people had found the jokes that I had put in the site. And it was the highest dug thing that Adult Swim had done. In my journey, that was fantastic because I finally felt like I was connecting with my audience.
People are reading the jokes I'm writing in the comments.
Yeah. So I peaked my second day.
So as things started growing, you started hiring a team. Did you learn any lessons from that?
That's where imposter syndrome really started coming back, because I hired people. By this time, people had degrees in this kind of thing. And I was giving that piece of paper a lot more credence than I was given my School of Hard Knocks. So people that I hired are phenomenal, but I did not really know how to trust that these are the things they're good at and these are the things that I'm good at. I continuously saw if I was a team lead that I should know how to do things. And part of it was I really want to know these magic spells. I see technology like magic. All a magic spell is a program that they run, whether it is words that they say or movements that they do. And it's all in different languages. And I saw the same thing. So I hired for talent more than I hired for fit. I like to give very relevant but nuanced tech challenges. I need to know two things. I need to know that you know the thing that you say you know. But more importantly, I also need you to know this is the kind of work you're going to be doing. Is this the kind of thing that you want to do or can do? And this was still in the days of XML. I had this engineer building something with Ajax and XML, and I think something with authentication. And I came in and he had the documentation up. And I didn't say anything, but he looked at me, he said, "You never told me I couldn't read the documentation." And I loved that. I loved that he went not only to read the documentation, but that he was ballsy enough to say that in that manner. Now, what I did not realize was how that might translate later on. He would often berate me for my teaching style, that he could not follow my stream of consciousness. As you know, when you asked me the first question, I didn't start from the beginning. I started from the middle and brought you to the end and then back to the beginning and all around. And then this engineer also, he would be cantankerous about other engineers, what they were working on, especially me. And this was a good lesson for me. And in fact, I was just in an interview the other day where I was asked, if you could go back and change one thing from your past, what would it be? And I said, it would probably be this, but I don't know what I would change or how I would change it. Because anytime anything would break, this engineer would say, "Oh, did Drew touch it?" If the ads, Drew was the one working on the ads, so he probably broke that. And I never wanted to push back because I did not see the value in that. There's an idea of shalom bayit, peace in the house. So I would just smile, grin, bear it, and continue to do my work. Oftentimes, saving the day if we had some kind of crazy deadline that needed to get done, working through the night, making sure that everything was working. I joke that I was the dad at Adult Swim because I took care of all of the non-glamorous things, ads, analytics, things of that nature. And so one of the lessons that I learned is if you're not speaking towards the good things that you're doing, oftentimes nobody else is either. Unless you have a really amazing manager who goes to bat for you, and that's not guaranteed. So I had an amazing time at Adult Swim. Towards the end of my tenure there, we had gotten into live stream TV. We We basically invented Pluto TV a couple of years before Pluto TV made the scene. What we did was we had a fish tank and we had a camera, and we needed to do some content. We were finding ways to get more eyeballs on our content, and we wanted to do some live stream content. So we had an idea of a thing called Fish Center. Think of Howard Stern and Sports Center had a baby, and that baby was fish. So it was three guys in a room. So I helped build out the studio. I learned what dark fiber is, learned you can't have day-to-day operations for a TV station and live TV on 1 gig of internet, and then help build out the Pluto TV part as well. So we had these old Elemental servers that one of the Turner sports teams was no longer using, is setting up EC2s. Back in 2011, somebody had turned me on to this thing called AWS, and it just was great. I no longer had to wait on another engineer in another part of the company to provision a server for me to work on something. I was able to spin up EC2s and learn about S3 buckets and be very self-sufficient in building out things. I also learned the hard way, just because you shut down that EC2 does not mean everything is hunky-dory. Oh, I shut down the server, so everything is good. And then 3 weeks later, I have a $300 bill because I did not delete the database. But because I had spent so much time with AWS, I was able to work also on the things such as Elemental encoding. And again, I didn't know the term event-driven architecture, but that's exactly what we had there. It fell to me to maintain the marathons, basically these XML files that took between 4 to 6 hours every day to set up. Somebody would choose what videos were about Chicken, Rick and Morty, Aqua Teen Hunger Force they wanted to have in that week. We had to find the videos on one server, copy them over to another server, encode them the right way, find all of the timings, build in ad breaks, and then update the XML files that Elemental server needed. And I said, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I was learning Perl at the time. I wanted to play around with the HTML5 package of Perl. And because it was an internal tool, I was able to do all the UX, so a lot of drag and drop and things of that nature. What if we could turn this not only into a 20-minute project for a non-technical person to do, but also make it fun for them as well? So setting up all of these directories, but then I used the HTML5 package to make it more visual. Drag and drop videos and have them drop into an S3 bucket. Have that S3 bucket then call a Lambda, which then would trigger the encoding process through Elemental, and then save that to another S3 bucket. I loved it because it was like a Rube Goldberg machine. And one of the engineers said, why are you doing this in Perl? I said, because I know how to do this in Python, and I know how to do this in PHP. I wanted to do something else. Well, the reason why I'm telling you this is I was working on things like the CDN. And this one particular day, because I was not letting higher-ups know, hey, I built this thing. It's exciting to me because of the technology, but here's why this should be exciting to you. Because I didn't have anybody doing that for me, I was moved out of Adult Swim. And again, that was a blessing in disguise.
Hey, sport. How was school today?
It was okay, Dad. How was work?
Ugh. Actually, I had a rough day. Leading an engineering team is hard. I mean, I have to ship new software, meet deadlines, and tackle new projects while keeping my team focused on the day-to-day. It's hard to keep up.
Jeepers, Dad. Why don't you call Maris? They're the staffing firm with the best technical resources around. They helped Billy's dad. He used to be stressed out like you. He was missing deadlines, his team was overworked, and a bunch of folks left the company because it was too stressful. But then he called Maris. And they put resources to work right away. He hit all his deadlines and freed up his team to do other work. His boss was so happy that Billy's dad got some extra time off.
Time off? Wow. What did he do with that?
He spent it with Billy.
Aww.
That's a swell idea, son. I'll call Maris today. Now, you go wash up for supper.
Before we move on, I must stop you and thank you for your service. Because as a consumer of Robot Chicken Marathons on Adult Swim, I'm a huge fan of the show. I got introduced to it, I forget how many years ago. For folks that don't know, Robot Chicken is a stop motion animation show. And it's so darn hard to make this stuff, like, you know, reposing a G.I. Joe figure, you know, 15 to 30 times a second, and then superimposing his mouth moving. It's hilarious, very out of pocket humor, as the kids would say. About 15 minutes long. It's on Adult Swim, very late at night, and they'll often have many of these 15-minute episodes in a row. And I find them side-splittingly funny. They were from Seth Green and who are the other folks that were involved in that? Do you remember?
I met Seth Green a couple times. Really down to earth, great guy. So when I was at Disney, before I knew about working at Adult Swim, I would come in each day and tell my friends in the room about, oh, you should have seen this episode of Robot Chicken. I was told, keep your voice down because some of the content on the show may not be appropriate in the workplace.
This is Disney, sir.
Yeah. But then when I worked at Adult Swim, that was fantastic. And for the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie premiere, Seth was in the office. I called my wife and I said, oh, Seth Green is here. And I don't know how to go over and say hi to him. I was a lot more shy back then. I was a lot more introverted. And she said, oh, break the ice. Tell him Happy Shavuos. I said, what? She said, it's a lesser known Jewish holidays. And so I said, Happy Shavuos. He said, what? And I told him. And we started talking. And my wife came over since we lived just down the street, played with my daughter, who was about a year old at the time. And then I saw him again 12 hours later at the movie premiere. He was walking down the row and he's like, oh, look, there's Drew. Hey, Drew. And then I met him a couple of years later. He remembered. I like the fact that Adult Swim was working with some down to earth type people who are also really, really funny.
So you started to mention you were in a kind of transitional period there. Things were changing at the CTO's office.
Yeah. So because I had this amazing day where I was on each one of our live stream TV shows in one day, just showing up. I made a rap video for Fish Center. I had just built an iOS app for our Swap Shop show, and I had built something else for them. And I was on these different shows just talking about the technology. But I also was on the phone with Akamai because the same type of problem we're having here, we were having on the Adult Swim streams. And then I had built this tool, this MODOK tool to Marathon On Demand. And the executive vice president did not know anything that I was working on. He knew that the other engineer was working on the video player, and he put his hand out one evening. And I said, what's that? He said, I just shook his hand because he built the video player that I needed him to build, and I didn't want you to feel left out. And the very next day, I had been moved over to the CTO's office, a completely different organization with different ways of metricizing success, different leadership, and different business goals. But I was moved over there because they needed somebody to help run the migration from on-prem to AWS. And that's where I, again, had a lot of fun finding solutions to really, really difficult problems. We had one where we needed to use a certain CMS, but Adult Swim brand didn't want to use the CMS. And so I was able to architect out this headless system using the exact same thing I did with the Elemental servers. Let's drop video in buckets. Let's use Lambdas to run things. Let's then hydrate a Elasticsearch. And from there, I caught the eye of a senior vice president, started to mentor me. And around this time, we needed to build out our team. So I was promoted from lead engineer. I was on my way to an architect track to tech manager. And I was very unhappy that day. I told my boss, I'm already worried about ruining my own two daughters' lives. Now you're giving me 6 grown adults, and I'm now worried about ruining their lives as well. Well, fortunately for me, this senior vice president started doing skip levels with me and started really shaping the way I saw leadership, and I fell in love with that. So on one hand, I was still very hands-on computer, but on another, I was learning things about managing expectations, managing people. So this VP brought me over to NBA.com. Later on, he told me I was a poster child for a self-taught engineer, did not know the value that he could bring, and was not in a place where he could really go full steam ahead. So brought me over to start a internal API SaaS team. So what we did was we ended up building all of the services that ran all 30 apps for 50 million concurrent viewers. If I could sidebar and go back to my grandfather, he had passed away about 6 months prior to this time. And I had gone to his funeral, spoken with his business partner. So when my new NBA.com boss told me, this is what we're working on, he said, your team is going to build all of the services that run everything. Your services cannot go down. If you make a deployment, you cannot break authentication or data aggregation, stats, videos. How does it make you feel, my friend? And I showed him there was a building being built outside of his office. And I said, when people look at these buildings, most people see the glass and the metal, but I see the foundation, the concrete, and explained that my grandfather, he and his business partner started by pouring in place windowsills. And they said, there's got to be a better way of doing this. The same way I had felt about XML, it's taking 6 hours. There's got to be a better way of doing this. Well, unbeknownst to me, he had the same conversation 50 years before. There's got to be a better way of doing this. So what they did was my grandfather invented a way of pre-stressing concrete. Rather than pouring it in place, they would pour the concrete in their plant to whatever the shape needed to be. They used a system that ensured that moisture was not being wicked away from the concrete and already had the joists in place, already had any kind of pipes and holes in place, and it revolutionized how building is done. But nobody wanted to touch a new way of doing concrete. Think about that. If you're building a parking garage or a skyscraper, you're going to go with the way that things were done. So at his funeral, his business partner had told me this story that nobody would touch it. So for their first client, what my grandfather did was he constructed a platform, and he stood underneath the platform while the cement truck driver with a truck full of cement drove over the platform. And his business partner said, I've never seen a man sweat more bullets than your grandfather did. He knew it was going to work because he ran the models, taught himself Fortran. He ran the models in the computer program as well and knew it was going to work. But there was that one iota of doubt that he might have forgotten something or something might not be there. And I told that to my boss. I said, we've run the tests. We know that everything is going to work. It's been QA'd, but I still have that one iota of doubt every time we make a deployment. And that's how you can sleep well at night, knowing that we're going to build something that won't break because I'm obsessing over that one piece. Later on, the next day, my boss told me, he said, I really like your story. He said, we're naming your team Foundational Platforms. And as I said, I had come a long way to having a team that I had been given and taking this team of a couple engineers really still trying to get their feet underneath them, some contractors, and there were five of us on the team, but I always said there were six living members because the team itself, Foundational Platforms, was a living thing. And it was a way to honor my grandfather as well. Every success that we had was an honor to him. And so, as I said, I really was learning a lot about what I call the economics of empathy. Thinking through, if I have an engineer who is worrying about where he is going to pray during his iftar prayers at noon, and thinking through, I don't have a place, I don't want to pray in public, and I'll have to go to the bathroom and hope that nobody needs to use the bathroom when I'm praying. If he's worrying about this, he's definitely not worrying about the things that I'm paying him to worry about. And if I'm a leader on the team, if I'm a manager or executive, and I have access to places and people, I know for a fact he's not alone in doing midday prayers. So by thinking through what are the challenges that my team has and building that in, I found that to be just as imperative as building in the tests and making sure that by investing in my people, I was investing in the product that we built as well.
Now, how do you end up transitioning from there to Warner Media Innovation Labs?
So the way I got to Innovation Labs, I wanted to help people move about. I pitched an idea called Promote and Pivot. And this was similar to Toastmasters, but it was a three-prong approach. The crux of this was an innovation marketplace. So the problem I was trying to solve for was I knew too many people who wanted to move about, but they didn't have enough experience or enough exposure. And I wanted also a way to innovate ideas. So the way we did this was there was a three-prong approach to the marketplace. We would have a way to submit ideas. We then had a voting mechanism. Then we had a hackathon to build out the top ideas. I pitched it to that senior vice president who was a mentor of mine, and we got funding to start to build it out. I had also pitched it to another vice president, told me, hey, you invented the innovation labs. I said, what is that? He said, give me some time and some budget and I'll move you over. So at this time, I was running a team with HBO Max, building out a way of authenticating HBO Go users to use HBO Max when it first launched. I was also running my team with NBA, but the NBA contract was coming to an end. So he found some money, brought me over to this thing based out of New York and asked me, what is your big, hairy, audacious goal? If you could build anything, you could take the guy out of Adult Swim, but you can't take the Adult Swim out of the guy. The idea was Rick and Morty and Your Name Here. Choose your own adventure time. He said, tell me, how does it work? I said, well, we have the ability to build videos on the fly using Elemental encoders. We have Azure data lakes that have the clips of every word that has ever been spoken. And we have a thing that would be able to be prompted to speak. He said, actually, we have the beta to GPT-3. So to get started on this big, hairy, audacious goal, I started on working on two different projects. One was a chatbot with Bugs Bunny, and the other was Mad Libs with Lego Batman. This is long before Harrison and I invented LangChain, but it was a real pain to chain together the various function that I needed GPT to do to come across as a Bugs Bunny chat, to extend its memory buffer, or to do five different computations in order to come up with a storyline, a story, find the nouns and verbs, and speak like Lego Batman. So while I was building all of this, I knew that I was doing pretty good technology-wise, so I decided to go back and get my MBA at Georgia Tech. So that way I could go further down the line of things like leadership, management, and product. Three things that I saw I needed, especially in the innovation labs. I was a solutions architect in that role, and I realized that I needed the credibility to talk with other leaders to influence them, why they should look at projects that we were coming up with to excite and delight the audience. And around this time, Discovery and WarnerMedia merged, and I had an opportunity to exit the company after 15 years. So from there, I had a couple bucket list ideas. One was to work with a pre-seed startup and help bring them to Series A or Series B. And another was to work with a Series D or E startup and get them to IPO or sale and get a piece of that equity as well. So when I exited WarnerMedia, I had the opportunity to start with a climate tech startup. A couple of years before this, at Turner, our CTO told us that we were going meatless Mondays, that we had partnered with a startup in the Atlanta community. And what they do is they measure and metricize and move food waste from large organizations such as Turner, hospitals, or hotels, and move that to places like Salvation Army. And the startup I went to, turns out, was the same startup, Gooder. So I came in as a tech lead and built out their tech team, modernized the tech stack. I was able to use lessons learned from NBA and build a very robust backend system that uses things like, I got to play around with serverless databases. I thought to myself, wow, that's something I'd never heard of before. But when you think about it, it's just storage and compute and goes to sleep. And then after a couple of years, it was time for me to move on. And here we are talking.
What do you do when you're not working? Any hobbies you're into?
Yeah. Well, right now, as I'm in between jobs, I'm spending much of my day working on some technology products and projects just for fun, but also to show prospective clients and companies, here are some of the things that I worked on in my past. I can't show you the exact things, but let's go ahead and build out a GraphQL server and have that aggregate different data. Or let's build a chatbot using LangChain and Golang. And then I go into my daughter's robotics class a couple times to give tech talks. And I also am a mentor with IMCS, the Institute for African American Mentorship and Computer Sciences. And that's something that's very, very near and dear to my heart, to be able to mentor new leaders, up-and-coming leaders, computer science, PhD students, especially in the Black community. Another organization I am a part of that's very important to me is the Black Jewish Coalition. This is something that was set up in the 80s, from what I understand, through Senator John Lewis, as well as the American Jewish Council. And Atlanta is, I think, one of the only cities to do this sort of project understanding. And it is how the Black community and the Jewish community can support each other during difficult times. How do we help propel each other forward? So Dr. Gaucher at Morehouse helped me set up an HBCU internship at Gooder. And when I told him that I wanted to give back more in the tech industry, but really focus on HBCUs, he introduced me to IMCS. And then I have two daughters, 17 and 14. Our hobby is we are way into anything Star Wars and anything Star Trek. So we watch all of the TV shows that come out. I'll have to send you a photo of my desk. When I took the box home from when I left Gooder, we made a party and my daughters helped stand up all 50, 60 action figures that I've collected over the years. And then my wife is working on her MFA at Georgia State. So when she has time, we like to travel and go out into nature and walk around. Have you been to Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. A few times. Most fun was probably 96. I think I was there right after the Olympics, down there on business. I noticed that everything was named Peachtree or Dunwoody, that the barbecue was quite good. And
still is.
We had a lot of fun time around Buckhead and Little Five Points.
Excellent. Well, the reason why I ask is, you think about it, we are a big city, but in the middle of nature. I live over by Emory, and technically we are still in the city. We are well within the perimeter. We have coyotes running around. We have deer running around the neighborhood. So wherever we go, it feels like we're in nature. I didn't really talk much about my MBS. You know what that is, my MBS?
What is your MBS?
It's my Master's of Bullshit, and it's what I've been working on and curating. It's the list of books that I've been curating over the last 5 years or so. Again, being often self-taught on a lot of things, it's the books on why we do the things we do, the decisions that we make. And I have found great centering and peace through certain books that I'll share afterwards, such as Mindfulness, and the nexus between mindfulness and algorithms and technology, things of that nature. And Andrew, I cannot begin to thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. Really, it is my hope that any of the lessons that I've learned, I can impart on other people, either going through imposter syndrome, we're continuously pushing forward and we're continuously learning. It feels like a struggle, but that struggle means that we're making progress. I really hope that upcoming leaders are able to go higher and further than I be able to go. That's why my sign-off always is Excelsior.
We got to where we are standing on the shoulders of giants, and so hopefully we can support future generations and help them go even further.
I want to be that giant. Exactly. I want to be that the giant that other people can stand on so they can go further.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experiences with the listeners of Underserved.
Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate being here.
And we'll talk to everyone soon on the next episode of Underserved.
Thank you for listening to the Underserved podcast. For more information on the topics discussed and for show notes, visit the show website, underserved.fm. And please be sure to rate, like, and subscribe to Underserved. on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.